stories don't define you. How you tell them will. Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief story maker of Elkins Consulting.
When we share stories, whether in our personal or business lives, how we share them makes a difference in how we remember them and in how we're perceived by the people we're sharing them with. When you're listening to this podcast, I encourage you to listen and consider your own related stories. To listen and think about which stories in your life might have impacted you in a similar way. And think about how you share those stories and the messages they carry for you and for the people who are hearing them.
Well, I'm fortunate today to be interviewing my friend Sabrina Woods. And we met through the Hope Summit that Vincent Van Ven created and beautifully orchestrated back at the very beginning of the pandemic. And I was compelled by some of Sabrina's words. And so we connected. And I am just so grateful that you're taking the time to visit with me today. Thanks, Sabrina.
Sarah, it's such a treat to get to talk with you. It's one of those we felt instantly connected that first conversation. Even a couple of LinkedIn messages were deeper and more authentic than your typical exchange. So it's truly a pleasure to get to play and hang out with you today, right? It's playful.
It is playful. One of the things that I immediately latched onto was the fact that you were renovating a really old house when we were talking so that you could move into it. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, I'm not sure how old. It's in the 1930s. And we took a wall down and rearranged a kitchen. I was taking down some pretty antique wallpaper, and that takes quite perseverance. And then painting all different rooms. I'll say one more thing. The master bedroom, or the biggest bedroom, had a blue stripe down the middle. So I called that the racetrack room. And the spare bedroom was yellow with pale green trim, and I called that the Easter egg room, and they had to go. No racetracks or Easter bunny rooms any longer. They've been transformed.
Oh, that's
here
wonderful.
I am now. Yeah.
Well, the reason I latched onto that is that our home was built in 1890, and
Wow. We've
done a ton of projects on it. And hearing your stories and your hands getting all dried out from pulling off that wallpaper, and that really connected with me, and that was part of why I wanted to reach out to you, because you did send me your top five strengths. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my gosh, this would be fun to talk about in the context of our work and our projects, non-career related projects. But let's start, let me just ask you a quick question so that our podcast listeners will have a better feel for who you are and what you do. Can you just give a brief overview of what your actual income-producing activities are right now?
Sure. So I am a holistic career and life coach, as well as a speaker and, I should say, instead of workshop, I'll say webinar, presenter, because these days that's what we have to do. My background is many years in higher ed career services. I was at Northeastern, I was at Harvard, and I had a little tiny stint at the University of London for one summer. And in my private practice, I mostly work with mid-career professionals that are going through pretty major career transitions. And I take a holistic approach and also pay attention to a person's well-being or wellness during that usually really stressful time. So that's kind of a little bit about my work. Now, when we look at my unpaid work, I'm also the volunteer president of a professional association for career counselors in the Northeast. It's called the Career Counselors Consortium. And we had a strengths-based training a couple months back. So that actually got me into this topic. So I was kind of excited to talk further about it. And I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. And the question I always ask my guests at the beginning of the conversation is, can you please share something about yourself that most people wouldn't know about you? Maybe something that happened when you were a kid, or something about your personality that shifted. People who know you now, something they wouldn't know about you.
I will say that I was a total tomboy in high school and college. I did things like karate in high school and in college. I loved rock climbing, camping, I would go out with my guy friends on a camping weekend and we would just be in the woods the whole time. And I didn't wear makeup, just was totally into the outdoors and the adventure stuff. And so my funny story is that when I turned, I don't know, something like late 20s, the early 30s, I moved in with two women and had a condo with them. And I think they helped me balance my sides out. And so got to get into a little more makeup and style and fashion and leave a little of the tomboy edge behind, but still love the outdoors today.
Oh, I love that. Of course you knew I would love that. Given
yes, my propensity who likes to hike in the mountains. Still love the outdoors, but I don't have to be quite as
hardcore.
quite as hardcore. I love going away now and staying in an Airbnb as opposed to a tent. It's been a little while since I went camping.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah. That's so funny. I guess that doesn't really surprise me about you, but it is something that I didn't know because we really haven't talked about that much, despite the fact that you've seen pictures of me on the mountain behind my house probably 100 times in the last 8 months or so. But wonderful. That's a good thing to share. I always like to ask that question in the podcast because I love for our listeners to have some point of context so that when they hear your stories about who you are and things that you've done, it kind of puts things together for them in a different way than if they were just listening to a straight up podcast without that kind of information about you.
I like that. It also makes the person really think, what is something that I don't share very frequently or haven't thought about? And so it actually activates the individual to think back to some older stories that or older ways of being. And so it's fun for the individual to think back on those, which I know is what your book does anyway. Yeah. Activates us to think back our past stories. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
The audience needs to know I'm just started Sarah's book and I'm loving it. So I'm going to put a shout out. You got to get this book. You didn't ask me to say that. This is separate from the book, but it's wonderful.
Thank you.
I was reading it on the beach recently, so that was great.
I find that the beach is a really good place to read and absorb. My husband and I spent a month in Cayucos, which is in Central Coast of California, right on the beach. And it's probably one of the last little funky beach towns on the coast. It's small and it wasn't particularly warm because it was February. But it was funny because when we were going down there, I thought for sure I would be so inspired to do more writing because I was finishing up the detail edits on my book and I was planning to spend a lot of time sitting on the beach and writing. And I did not get that kind of inspiration when I was there. It was so interesting. I don't know if I wrote at all other than show notes for podcasts, because of course I had four episodes that came out while we were gone because it was 4 weeks long. And I remember sitting on the beach reading The Change Code by Monica Borgo. And it had that same effect on me. Sitting on the beach and reading that book really had me in much deeper thought than just reading it somewhere at home here in Montana. But as soon as I got home, I was up on my mountain and hiking, getting my heart rate up, and boom, full on inspiration, started writing again that day. I mean, it was really fascinating to see how the shift in environment shifted how my brain was working in terms of inspiration and thoughtfulness.
Well, now here's something else that's nice that I'm noticing from what you're sharing, and that is that you didn't judge it. Oh, this is bad. I'm not writing. You stayed true to what the moment was giving you. And I think that's a nice lesson for us to sort of, can we follow our energy? That's a phrase I love to use with clients. Follow your energy. Where are you right now? As far as things that are interesting or as far as what you need in that moment. And you needed to read and you needed to maybe be more quiet and let things percolate to be extracted later or popped out later.
Yeah. I love that you picked that up from that because there were a couple times where I was kind of kicking myself, you know, like, what is wrong? Why the ocean? I mean, these huge crazy waves and it's so beautiful and I'm digging my feet into the sand and walking in the cold water, and why am I not getting inspired to write? And I tried to force it a little, you know, trying to come up with analogies. It's so easy to come up with life analogies when you're next to the ocean. And but there was a point where I just decided exactly to just own it and be where I was and not fight it. And what's interesting is that when I got home and was so inspired, I started to wonder if maybe I shouldn't spend a month at the beach because it didn't inspire me. And then the next part of me was exactly what you just said. Clearly, I needed that. My brain needed that break. It needed that shift in energy. So I followed it. And now I, of course, things have all shifted all over the world. And I don't know if we're going to be able to go back next year in February like we were planning. But just knowing that I had that opportunity to take that step back and not write was really important to me. So that makes me curious. Clearly, you've had this experience because you've lived it, because you're able to share it with such insight and compassion. So I'm curious about when that happened to you, that kind of a time when you felt that shift in your energy and you were able to follow it.
Let's see. I had a big one, epiphany moment. You might be looking for small, but I'll just share this really larger one. I was in between jobs. I had been in higher ed and there was a reorg, and I had a difficult sort of situation where I had health issues, a job reorganization, and some other random things like car accidents. I was okay in the car accidents, but I had to get a new car because one of them totaled it. So it was a whole lot, let's just say a whole lot of bad stuff at the same time. And I was really struggling with the idea of needing to find another job. I was looking for another part-time job in higher ed as a career coach to augment my part-time private practice, because that's what I'd been doing for 5 or 6 years. And I thought I wanted to continue that. I was on retreat in Michigan, actually. And I remember the Adirondack chair. I can specifically remember the open field and the Adirondack chair that I sat in on the last day of a 3-day silent retreat. I'm into mindfulness practices, and this was one thing I felt like I needed. Sitting down in that space at the end of this retreat, I all of a sudden came up with this concept that maybe I didn't have to work so hard or push so hard. What if I let go a little? Could I financially handle giving myself a window of, say, what if you just relax for the next 6 months even? Not relax, don't do anything, but relax, stop putting so much pressure on yourself. Do the private practice part-time and see what might unfold. See if something will just happen instead of always pushing, pushing, pushing. I'm really good at the drive, being driven. This was an opportunity to instead allow for flow and openness. That was end of October. And that idea really did stay with me, and I stopped being so hard on myself. I stopped beating myself up. And it was a couple of months later, it was early February, where someone had reached out and said, oh, we've got this part-time contract at Harvard, you know, do you know anybody? Or one person from Harvard, a different part, had said, hey, this might interest you. And someone else was just, I was part of a mass emailing of 30 career coaches in case anybody knew anyone. I landed that part-time job at Harvard School for Public Health. And it was such the perfect fit. Because of my interest in health and well-being, and the fact that they only needed someone 1 to 2 days a week, so I didn't have to commute so much, so it'd be a little easier on me, because I'm in a different town. I'm in Providence, and Boston's anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half away, depending on where I go. So there was this just realization that I didn't always have to push and run and grab and try and overwork, and that I could, at moments like this, allow things to unfold and let them be good. And it didn't happen immediately, but it did happen. And so, you know, thinking about you on the beach, not pushing yourself, is what kind of triggered that story. So we're in a culture that's very doing oriented and very fear based. Oh my God, what's going to happen to you? Da, 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 da. And so this is a message also to anybody who's in that tough spot and doesn't know exactly how things are going to work. They might just work, might not be perfect. It might, but sometimes we just have to have a little trust that things are going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put another little tiny piece on this. When I'm coaching clients and they're in this angst about a job, I've sometimes taken them through their worst case scenario to alleviate their own pressure that they put on themselves and actually said, okay, what's the story here? Do you mind if I share a tangent story about this worst case scenario?
Please do.
Thing?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think this is, it's really universal. We're in this culture, we're really driven and we're really hard on ourselves. So one client I was working with in particular had been laid off and was her biggest fear. When I said, okay, what is it that you're most worried about? Let's look at your worst case scenario. She said, Sabrina, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my house. That's real. And we're going to Maslow's hierarchy. We can't function when we don't think we're going to have food, water, shelter. You know, this is big. It's really debilitating for us. So what did we do during my coaching session with her? We got out the calculator. We calculated her worst fear, her worst concern, her biggest angst. I will lose my house. This was in February, and we discovered she wasn't going to lose her house for 11 months. It wasn't going to be until January of the following year. What that did for her is it allowed us to ask that question, do you think you're going to have no work between now and then? No consulting, no part-time, no retail, no income whatsoever. And she realized it wasn't possible for her to not do anything for 11 months. Something would work out. Right. It may not be ideal, but that she could actually take her biggest worry off the shelf and no longer lose all that energy to rumination. Mm. So she left feeling lighter. She didn't have her problem solved, but she didn't have to worry so much about the biggest fear. Probably wasn't going to happen. And sure enough, I think it was like 4 months later, she landed another job. And she might have landed it more quickly because she took that big, huge, scary thing off her plate. So when I sat down in that Adirondack chair, looked at that open field, I was giving myself space and I was taking away my being so tough on myself. You've got to have this figured out. You've got to have a job. No, you know what? Look at your bank account. It's not ideal, but you have savings. You can live off the part-time income from the private practice until 6 months, maybe, you find that other part-time job. Mm. The other part of the story is, after the Harvard Chan contract ended, which was, 6 months, because they kept, or no, sorry, a year and a half, 18 months, they kept extending me, which was amazing. But when that did finally end, I gave myself the summer to not worry about the job. And by fall, I was so busy, I actually made the decision I could be full-time entrepreneur. So again, I gave myself the space, and again, the answer evolved, and the situation emerged that I could just do this. I could be full time in the work that I love. So interesting.
So I'm imagining you sitting on this Adirondack chair and looking at this big field. And I actually use that image with my coaching clients when they're kind of desiring clarity, which. Yeah, I'm not sure that clarity really exists more than from 1 minute to the next, especially now because things shift all the time. But I use this image of standing at a doorway and you are kind of at this threshold and there's an institution behind you and a big open field in front of you. And you can take any path you want in front of you, or you can go back to the institution. And some people do. Some people decide that's too many choices, too many options, and it's overwhelming. So they turn around, they go back. But many of us stand there for a long time, not sure which path to take. And I always like to remind people that it doesn't matter where you start because your path is going to alter anyway. So just take a step. Just step away from the threshold and find the next step one at a time because you just... And you may take a turn that you're not so excited about, but this is huge open option, open field that fine, if you went right, you should have gone left, go left next time. Like you just, So I love that vision of you sitting in the Adirondack chair and seeing this open field as open opportunities and an opportunity to take that step back and decide to give yourself that break. And it fits right into your strengths too. So if you wouldn't mind, I'm going to jot it down over here just so that I have it in front of me. If you wouldn't mind telling me your top five strengths again.
Sure. I may or may not get them in the right order, but
it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Activator or maximizer. One of those two those are my first two. I'm not sure in which order. So we've got activator, maximizer, ideation. Mm-hmm. And then we have positivity. And then connectedness and woo are my, that's my six, five and six somewhere in there.
Yeah. So when I do this with my coaching clients, I always look all the way to number 10 and really focus on the up to about number six, because the reports used to include a percentage next to the top strength so that you could see how close one and two were, and two and three. They could have been 0.05 percentage points away from each other that they would have been flipped. So that's why I go to six, is because what I find is oftentimes depends on the day of the week. It depends on the time of the day. It depends on what project you're working on. Those two may flip. And we talked about that a little bit during our last phone call, just catching up. So I'm imagining you sitting at that Adirondack chair, and part of the conflict for you was that whole maximizer and activator. Because for our listeners, a maximizer is somebody, I refer to maximizers as Spinal Tap folks. Now, many people have seen This Is Spinal Tap. It's a documentary that's a fake documentary of a rock band, or a fake rock band, fake documentary. I don't know. Rob Reiner film. It's hilarious. There's one scene where the guitar player, who's not very bright, guitar player is playing around. He's a good guitarist and he's playing really hard and loud. And Rob Reiner mentions, oh, isn't that cool the way I heard your amplifier was custom built. And the guy says, yeah, I had a custom built. And he said, well, why did you have a custom built amplifier? And the guy says, look at the knobs. And all those knobs on the amplifier go up to 11. Instead of 10. And he says, Rob Reiner says, well, why? And he goes, because, you know, when you just need that extra oomph, you can turn it to 11. And Rob Reiner says, why don't you just make 10 a little louder? And the guy, blank face, goes, well, my amp goes to 11. And it's just hilarious. Every time I see that scene, and I'll include that scene in the blog post associated with this podcast for those who are unfamiliar and for those who just want to be reminded of the hilarity of that movie. So the reason I refer to maximizers as the 11s or the Spinal Tap reference is that a maximizer, when they see something on a scale of 1 to 10 that's around an 8, they want to make it an 11. So the ultimate goal is to make whatever it is that they see great potential in, they want to make it extraordinary. And it's really hard to tone that down, but you won't see something that is underperforming and want to make it extraordinary. You'll see something that's already good, that's already a B or B plus, and you want to make it an A plus, an 11. So having you sit on that chair, and your activator, which is somebody who just gets an idea and wants to move on it. My first coach called me Speedy Gonzalez because of my strategic activator. and that's exactly what it is. Most of us with activator are the Speedy Gonzalez of the world. Once we get an idea in our head, we just go forward on it. And sometimes we don't stop to think about the consequences or what obstacles we might hit. So I'm just imagining you as Speedy Gonzalez, just like me, sitting on that Adirondack chair, and your ideation, which is a person that constantly has that hamster on the wheel turning in your head, constantly coming up with new ideas. And you have all these ideas and you're sitting on that chair, and you had to take that step back and not lean into your activator and not look at your maximizer, which are your top strengths. But what's beautiful is that you completely dove headfirst into your connectedness. That was that moment where you realized everything is connected. And you practically saw, I'm because you were sitting outside, I'm imagining it's suddenly nighttime and you see all of the constellations in front of you and how they are connected to each other, the stories that connect one to the next. And that's where your connectedness was just on high alert that day. You're seeing how one thing led to another to get you to where you were at that moment. And you were able to, without really seeing it, but just knowing that the next thing would come as well.
Yeah. And I knew that I needed to not work so hard at it. I needed that lesson. Mm-hmm. It was another sort of important piece.
And that's what connectedness is knowing that something is going to, exactly. And yeah. Feeling, it's really a feeling, connectedness for you, not for everybody that has connectedness, but for you, it's really a feeling of the, again, I'm going back to this vision of constellations, that everything is connected, and the sense that regardless of what you do, there's like the writing on the wall that it's going to be connected to whatever you're doing right now. So being able to, again, having that faith in yourself, in your skills, in your connected past, that it's going to connect into a future, even if you can't see it right now and you can't take a step toward it right now, you know it's there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think in that moment I knew that something would happen and that I just needed to, I needed to back off and be kinder to myself. Mm-hmm. Because of all the hard things that had happened, and I was still getting over multiple health issues and had, you know, had two trips to the ER in a 1 month period that were life threatening. Yes. Concussion was part of it. It was just so intense. And it's like, no. You need to be quiet. You need to listen. You need to trust. You need to tap that intuition. It was hence why I really like the mindfulness so much, is to slow down and to tap that inner wisdom or inner knowing, which is part of that connectedness strength.
Yeah.
But it's a powerful, powerful moment that I just need to keep circling back to when I start to feel overwhelmed. Wait a second. And I tell this to clients too. Think about past times when things worked out. You need to keep remembering those moments that did work out okay and bring them to the now. And we need this now more than ever. There's so much challenge from our side of the pandemic to our racial injustices that we're holding so much challenging energy right now that we have to stop and maybe listen to that inner knowing and knowledge to help guide us in the best next steps for ourselves, and mm-hmm. trust that even if it's hard, eventually things will work out. It might not be the path that I thought it was going to be, and it might not be anything you imagined. And you may, for some of us getting really concrete about job seekers, it may have to be something you didn't want to do right now, but you need to for the moment to get by.
Right.
And you can also say, that's okay. That's okay. Instead of judging it so harshly.
Because it's part of your path. So yeah. I would love to just hear, if you think about this for a minute. You finish that retreat, and you come home, and I know I call it an after-conference hangover. You know, when you go to an event and you get all jazzed and super excited about what's next, and then you go home and none of your colleagues went to this event, and so they're either actively hostile against your new ideas or they're just ambivalent. They weren't there. They didn't feel the energy. And so 2 weeks later, you may as well have not gone at all. that's how I describe the after conference hangover, and which is why the no longer virtual events are so unique, is because we just keep that momentum and that connection and energy. So I'm imagining your retreat and kind of the after retreat hangover of going back to your life. But I'm guessing that there was a point where you had an opportunity to think, no, wait a minute, I have to come back to that aha moment on the chair. And you were able to do that, even though it was against your instinct to jump on the next thing. Do you remember a moment like that shortly after that retreat, that next pivot point?
I don't remember specifically. This was 2016, so that's quite a few years back now. So I can't really pinpoint it. But what I can say is there was this tie to the physical place and that physical moment. Like, because it was this open field and I was sitting in, I'd been in silence for 3 days. So there were these circumstances around that aha moment that made it more memorable. Mm-hmm. So that instant, it's like, as I talk with you, I'm right back feeling what I felt. So there's something about the fact that it was outside and it was that chair and it was open space and I'd been in quiet that just made it bigger. So it made it sticky. I could hold on to it and bring it with me because it felt that moment was somewhat unique. Mm-hmm. So I think that I'm grateful that it happened in a very specific place because it allows me to be more indelible, be more into my memory now.
Mm-hmm. But so when you,
that's so interesting to me.
You got the Harvard gig shortly after, just like 4 months later, 3 months later. Did you connect those two? Did you suddenly go, oh yeah, that's why I was able to take the step back because this was in my future? Or because I think
I was
about
odd.
Things like that.
Yes, I was odd. I was like, what it was for me, I did take a step back. I did trust. I still continued my part-time private practice, but it wasn't at a level that I could survive on, right? So I, you know, was definitely not running around trying to chase things. I was being a little more relaxed, and this found me. Like I said, I didn't find it. I had two people that reached out to me. And then, yes, when it happened, I was just like, I couldn't have written the script for a better scenario.
Right.
I didn't even know that this could be a possibility. So these part-time jobs within higher ed career services are they're very infrequent. So I was thinking, oh my gosh, how am I ever going to find, you know, to a degree, I was thinking, how am I ever going to find this? And to have that just come up pretty much out of the blue in that early February and be able to land it through a phone interview. I had two interviews, but to be able to land it through these phone interviews, it just felt like this was it. This was where I was supposed to be next. So there was definitely a connectedness in its rightness. And I was also, there's also a piece of me that was completely freaked out because I'm like, oh my God, these people are incredibly smart. You know, there was some imposter syndrome that popped
right.
in there, but I'm like, hold on, girl. You know what? You've got, you know, 15, 16 years of career services under your belt, and maybe you bring some value that's different than what they've heard from other people or whatever. So that's me going off on a tangent. So easy to do when you're ideation, right? Because these other ideas pop up. Yeah.
That wasn't a tangent. That
was felt incredible to land.
It's totally connected.
Okay. There we go.
Well, because I asked you, because I love connectedness. I think it's like number 9 or 10 on my list. It's pretty high along with communication. So when I see connectedness in somebody's top 5 or 6, I always love to hear how that shows up for them. I find that the people with connectedness have some of the best small world stories. Where they run into somebody who knew your best friend in college while walking down the street in Paris. Like, there are just all these weird things that happen with connectedness because you see it before it even happens. And you just ask the right questions because you know how connected we are. So
yeah,
that's why
I enjoy the trait. It is, It's that one I like. Maximizer and activator, I get mad at a lot, but connectedness and positivity, I never get mad at.
Yeah.
You hear people say that, oh, I'm so mad at this trait. This is driving me nuts. Because you're obviously in the basement when you're mad about your strengths, you know.
Yes. Yes.
But man, there are times when I'm just knock it off. I'll tell you a quick activator story, tangent. Someone sent me this really cool coaching program that was going to be offered for free. It's $1,000 normally. And I literally had to say, I can't do this because too many things have been activated and it was making me crazy. So it was sort of like, I can't activate and not see things through. I had to say no until maybe it'll come in the future and I'll be able to take advantage of that if they still offer it for free. But I had to actually walk away. And I was like, but I very specifically knew that I was saying no to my activator and ideation. And I had to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Like, oh.
Well, and you were basically using your connectedness. And to some extent, this is where your maximizer is showing up in a positive way. Your maximizer knew that you couldn't maximize that opportunity because you had all these other things going on. You knew that if you got into that, you were going to want to really go whole hog into it and maximize the opportunity, so
True.
To speak. Yeah. And so your maximizer was like, whoa, I don't think I can take on one more opportunity and do it to the degree that I would want to do it.
So I need more of those moments, though. So
yeah.
What do you say to your clients who say, activator, maximizer, ideation are wearing me out? And
yes.
I go, I mean, if I look in my email right now, the number of different threads I have started with a number of different people for both my professional association and my private practice and then my webinars and I'm like, yeah. So if you have types that are disgruntled about some of their, I don't want to give them up. I have learned to at least appreciate them. But is there a way to tame things that you feel the strengths become weaknesses because they do you harm?
Yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, it takes practice. Obviously, it takes practice. But I just had a coaching client say, I wish Maximizer wasn't in there. It was the exact same conversation in terms of she gets really frustrated with her Maximizer, partly because a maximizer can be insulting to people. It's hard for a maximizer to not give ideas for improvement to something that they see already is doing so well. And so that can be insulting to somebody who spent a lot of time on it. I'll give you an example. My husband doesn't have maximizer, but sometimes he acts like he does. And I would cook something. Like we were in France a couple years ago, and I tried this dish called brandade, and it's cod and potatoes and cream, and it's just so delicious. It's a real comfort food. It's a mini casserole comfort food. And I had it in Montpellier, and when we got back to Montana, it was September. So I waited about a month till it got cold out because we don't eat hot casseroles in the summer in Montana. And so I emulated this dish. And the very first time I made it, it was pretty good. It was very close. And my husband was like, wow, that's really good. You know what would make it even better?
And you're like,
yeah. Well, for the first one, I was like, okay, yeah, that's true. But by the third time I made it that winter, because I'm trying to perfect this recipe so I can make it for guests to come over, the third time I made it, it was really good. I mean, I had all these ideas about the texture and how to finish it and put some fresh parsley on top. And, you know, I served this beautiful dish with a side of grilled green beans, like the little French green beans on the side. So you'd have something green next to this casserole. It was beautiful. It was delicious. And when he said, you know what would make this even better? I was insulted. And so for a maximizer, that can be a time where you have to just see, you have to look at your audience and say, now's not the time.
Yeah.
This is, yeah. Maybe as she's making it next time, I can say, hey, maybe add this time. And that's fine. But at the time, when the finished dish is in front of you, just enjoy it.
Appreciate
just
it.
Say thank you. It's delicious. So Lisa Cummings is this phenomenal strengths coach that I interviewed on my podcast last year. I just love her. She's also a musician, so we have that in common. It's kind of funny. She just released a new CD, I think. But anyway, so Lisa Cummings gave me this perfect visual for when you need to turn down certain strengths and turn up other strengths. So what she suggested, going back to the Spinal Tap reference, you have an amplifier in front of you with a bunch of different knobs, and each knob is one of those strengths. And in certain circumstances, you need to turn down that maximizer and the activator and turn up your connectedness. And I would never suggest you turn anything down below a 5, because those are your innate talents. And if you aren't at least touching on them with your decisions and your conversations and relationships, you're doing yourself and whoever you're talking to a disservice. But there are times when that maximizer has to go down to 5, and that connectedness and positivity have to go all the way up to 8 or 10 or maybe 11.
So nice. I like that.
The example she gave was that she had a coaching client who had communication in her top strengths, and she kept trying to downplay it. She's like, no, communication is my weakness. And Lisa said, well, okay, explain this to me. How could communication be your weakness? She said, I talk too much. My boss has said, I talk too much during meetings. I don't leave room for others, blah, blah, blah. And Lisa said, okay, so that doesn't mean communication is bad. It just means that, and she gave that idea of having the amplifier with the knobs on it, turn down your communication and turn up your relator. Turn up your learner, which your learner is somebody who really is motivated and inspired by learning things. That's what drives them. If they get to do something new that they're excited to learn about, oh my gosh, they will collect all the information they can on it and learn deeply. And so this woman had learner in there, and Lisa suggested, listen to that part of your brain and observe, be more curious so that your communication can be turned down just a little bit.
That's a great example.
Yeah, I really liked it. She's brilliant. Lisa is brilliant. I actually keep thinking I need to get back in touch with her and have her on again, because the conversation was so rich. But so does that answer your question?
Yeah. No, I just have to try and execute it.
Yes, I know. Well,
but just thinking about it, and if I can, I'm a visual person. So if I can picture that dial and go, oh, just like I did with walking away from that coaching program that friend sent to me, oh, just turn the dial down a little bit.
Yeah. I find it helps me a lot because of my strategic activator. But in particular, it comes up with my command. So command is my number 4 strength, which means that I don't necessarily want to lead, but if it seems like people are floundering, if I get the impression that there's not leadership in the room, I will step in. And when I have to tone that down sometimes, especially if I am in a workshop setting where I'm facilitating a conversation and I have this tendency to kind of jump in, and I have to take that step back. I have to turn down the dial on my command and turn up maybe my communication or my connectedness that's, 8, 9, 10 in my strengths, so that even if there is leadership in the room, if I perceive it as being a lack of leadership, that's a problem.
Ooh.
So yeah, my command gets me, it used to get me into a lot of trouble, but as I've gotten more comfortable with it and being able to understand that just because I perceive a lack of leadership doesn't mean there is actually a lack of leadership.
Right. Or maybe there needs to be a lack of leadership so that someone else can emerge, because they get uncomfortable and activate, and they actually need to grow their leadership skills. So there's that, right?
There's definitely that.
Any other scenarios?
Yeah, that's the ideation. Okay, what else could be coming up here? What else can I do? What else is happening here that I can create the space that they need to step up. So, yeah, I love this tool. And it's so funny because I was so against assessments for so many years. I went through business college at Colorado State University. We did Myers-Briggs and a few others. And I always thought, ugh, I just couldn't understand the application. You know, I'd look at it, go, yeah, that's pretty accurate. And then I'd stop there. And it wasn't.
This one got you.
Yes, this one got me.
Harnessed your energy and your excitement and you ran with it.
Well, I feel like it's not as labeling or self-limiting as some of the other assessments that I've seen. And of course, it all depends on how you get coached in those assessments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is all about how somebody talks to you about the results that help you and or hurt you to decide how to apply the lessons in it. And when I had my older son take the assessment, I said, well, you know, that the collection of stuff in your room, I mean, he is a collector, he has input in his top strengths. And so he just is constantly collecting things. And there was a point where he said, you know, it just sounds like an excuse to me.
Oh.
And I said, well, you could use it that way. You could just say, well, that's my input and that's who I am. And I'm going to just, you know, go with it. But when you see the impact it has on the rest of us, like something gets smelly in your room and the rest of us have to deal with it, then you have to decide how you're going to use that input and find a way to make it more productive and less of a basement strength. So it's fascinating every time I work with somebody on this that is resistant to it. And I'll say, well, if Google can predict your behavior, what makes you think Gallup can't?
Ah, there you go.
Exactly. Yeah, it's fascinating stuff.
Well, you know this deeply, so it's a fun conversation to have when someone has this level of understanding.
Yeah, it's really
and
fun.
Can pull it from people too. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating. So one more story I would love to hear is you were talking about how your activator, maximizer, ideation, all that stuff were compelling you in your renovation of the house. And you said something, I can't remember what the context was, but it was about all these ideas and having to figure out priorities or something like that when we first started talking before I hit record. Do you remember what that was?
How those things are showing? Just now.
Yeah. I think it was in the context of, I said that we are renovating our kitchen pretty soon. We actually have a contractor coming to our house to give us some ideas and estimates here, like later this afternoon. And I was saying that I woke up this morning where my activator and ideation were just all over the place with what it's going to look like, how we're going to move all our furniture and what else are we going to do in the house while all the furniture is out of it. And you know, like this constant stream of thoughts and anxiety, because when my activator acts up, my sense of urgency just gets overwhelming. And your eyes lit up when I was telling you about this. So I'm guessing you had some of that going on when you were restoring your house.
Yeah, the activator, that activators, I'm finding that sense of urgency and that impatience can be quite challenging. And I think when you're on a time frame, but yet you've got people in your home during a pandemic working on projects that you're a little bit out of control, that's also really tricky. Like, well, when are you going to finish this part? Because I want to get in there and do this. Or, you know, the contractors, we worked it out, would come in during the day and work on the kitchen, and then they'd leave by 4:30 or 5, and then myself and my husband would come in and paint at night. Well, painting at night isn't even the best idea because you don't see as well. But we'd have a few hours since it was spring, the light less. And so we could get in there and we could make things happen. But I think when there's a lot of people involved in a project, there's some surrendering you have to do. So there's just letting go. Okay, well, it'll get done when it gets done, and we'll work with whatever happens. So that's a good kind of, if you can, chill those out and let that just be on its whatever time frame.
I just have to push this in here because I'm so curious. Was there a project where your maximizer showed up and you were so glad it was there? Like either in the kitchen or doing something in the house that turned out just really well?
We spent a long time on the design. There were a lot of different ways to do the furniture. It could go this way, that way, this piece. There, you know, when you're taking a wall down mm-hmm. and you're moving things around, then you get it. You have just a lot of different options. And so we took time on that piece and thought it through and looked at different, you know, I was looking at other people's houses online and rooms and layouts, and I never, ever thought that I'd be the type of person to hire someone to actually do the design. Cause I just never thought I'd be able to do that. And we did. And I'm like so glad we did, because the person had a 3D design and could move it around on the computer so I could visually see it. Mm. And so I think that combination of ideation and maximizer worked really well together to take that time, explore different ideas, see it through, so that this is my first home purchase. I'm wow. age 50, and that's my first home purchase. So it wow. may be the only big thing I do home purchase wise for a long, long, long time. So it's like putting that time in. Mm-hmm. And now when I sit, walk into that kitchen and that granny wallpaper's gone and that pale blue gray is on the top half and white on the bottom and it flows. Even the little step I have, this is definitely a maximizer thing. I have a step underneath the counter so that your feet don't dangle when they're on the stools for the island, for the kitchen uh-huh. island. So it's like that thoroughness of the maximizer to have it done just so gave that one time renovation a real boost.
Yes. I love how your maximizer showed through in that.
Now, when I was cleaning one day and I dragged the rug out and I vacuumed it, this is on the porch, I was annoyed with the maximizer because there was a spot and I had to stop and go in and get a bucket and soap and get the spot out of the rug that was on the porch. So there's moments when I'm really aggravated with it, but now there's no spot on the rug on the porch.
Yeah, but that was
the nice kitchen. So, you know, like, right. And that was also your... like over the top. Do you really need to clean the spot on this right now? You have a million other things going, but I see its potential and I get it. Like I can mm-hmm. see that was maximizer saying it needs to be just so.
And activator saying it has to be
activator
just so
now.
Right
now. Now.
But it's beautiful. I mean, think about it this way. It's done. You don't have to go back to it later because your activator said, no, it needs to be done right now. And your husband and anyone who walks into your house, they see the benefit of your maximizer showing up in the details that you took the time to create.
For that kitchen. The rug on the porch probably didn't matter, but the kitchen time spent really thinking that through. I'm really glad we did not rush it. It was the right move.
Oh, that's a wonderful story to end with. I love that because I'm a kitchen person. You know, I probably spend. Yes, yeah. I'm about to do it. We've been in the house 20
years. Take your
time. I'm not so good at that, but I'm strategic. So maybe I can take that step back and turn that dial up. I'm excited for it because it's been 20 years and I love to cook and I love to nourish and nurture people. And I think the kitchen is my way that I demonstrate that the most. So so when I hear you talk about your kitchen, it just lights me up. I can practically see it, even though I've never seen a picture. And because of the beauty and how you describe your stories, I felt like I was right there with you on the Adirondack chair in the silence. Like even in your words, I could feel the silence, which is a really interesting dynamic. So thank you so much for sharing those stories.
Oh, I was delighted to be chosen, selected, or whatever you want to call it. I had no idea what to expect, but it was delightful. And you are delightful.
Thank
you. Full stories from people in a beautiful way. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And we will, just for our listeners, you'll be able to look Sabrina up on LinkedIn. I will have a link to her LinkedIn profile and her website on the blog post associated with this podcast, which will be at elkinsconsulting.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. If you're planning an event or company retreat and want to bring in a memorable, entertaining, and highly practical speaker as your keynote speaker or workshop facilitator, please visit us at elkinsconsulting.com to learn how we can help and provide a memorable keynote or breakout session. Thank you. I look forward to hearing from you.
Now listen to me, honey, while I say, how could you tell me that you're going away?